WNYC is supported by Air France, presenting the A380, whose first-class section has a private dressing area complete with table, locker, and more. Air France is the official carrier for Marseille-Provence 2013, European Capital of Culture. More at airfrance.us.
Many people have heard that Dolly Madison saved a portrait of George Washington when the British set fire to the White House, and Jackie Kennedy's White House redecoration was the subject of a CBS television special viewed by 80 million people. But it's not common knowledge that the crumbling White House was completely gutted and rebuilt when Harry Truman was president. In his new book, The Hidden White House, Robert Clara exposes 60-plus-year-old secrets about one of the most important preservation projects in American history. It's published by St. Martin's Press, and I'm pleased that it brings Robert Clara to our show today. Welcome.
Hi, Leonard.
Haven't you made a specialty of uncovering overlooked and forgotten facets of American history? You told the full story of the Riviera, the nightclub that the Jersey mob built into the cliffs of the Palisades in the 30s. Also, the story of Antoine LeBlanc, one of America's first mass murderers, 1833,
yes.
So how did you come upon this story? This is another one of those untold stories, but it doesn't have any connection to the others.
No, and it's strange because I mean, I would love to be known as the historian who is the guy who uncovers the hitherto unknown stories. And in some cases, I am. The strange thing about the White House story was that it's a story that I thought everybody did know or should know, and yet it had never really been written about at any great length.
Well, why did it require 3 years of research? Has it been kept a secret to some degree?
Well, it required 3 years of research in large part because I need to keep my full-time job. But to a great extent, it was the researcher in me had an embarrassment of riches with this project because the amount of paper yielded by a project of this size, generated by the federal government in general, but especially undertaking something this big, is utterly monstrous. And a good portion of the time was spent just simply gathering documents.
Did the problem begin when George Washington and Pierre-Charles L'Enfant were planning Washington, D.C. in 1791?
No, they were actually not aware that they were building a heavy stone house on sandy soil, which it doesn't take an engineer to understand is rather problematic an idea. Soil mechanics as a study did not exist back then. So the site for the White House was chosen by L'Enfant and approved by Washington, mainly because it was one of the highest points in the federal city.
So when did problems start becoming evident?
Well, the problems had been appearing on and off throughout the years, actually, and that was the reason why the house itself had to be rebuilt in 1902 by Teddy Roosevelt. It's why Coolidge had to put on a new roof in 1927. The problem is that every time that these structural defects made themselves apparent, the most that they did was a patch job. And in many cases, they would do a quick fix that made the problem worse.
And then you write that FDR had forsaken the house's upkeep for most of the Depression and then most of World War II. Why? Was he trying to save money?
He was trying to lead by example.
He didn't cut down on his martini consumption.
Certainly not, no. But then again, the food budget of the White House has always been, that time at least, was paid out of the president's pocket. So FDR paid for his own gin. He was trying to lead by example, use it up, wear it out. And since it cost an enormous amount of money to just paint the house, they didn't even bother to do that.
So it was in pretty bad shape when he died and Truman became the president?
By the time the Trumans moved in, nobody understood just how dangerous the house was. What Margaret and Bess Truman saw when they came to inspect the family quarters was a very dingy, rundown place. They noticed that there were cracks in the walls and the ceilings were starting to bulge. The assumption at that time was that those things could be fixed with a good coat of paint.
Hadn't Eleanor Roosevelt warned them about the rats?
She did indeed. She
couldn't,
made a special
an exterminator had been brought in during FDR's years?
You know, they've
years?
Been – they were. I found a document from the FDR years in which there was a secret rat eradication program that had been snuck into the budget, but it never worked. The rats have been probably the most continuous residents of the house over the years.
And then after they moved in, there was a tea for the Daughters of the American Revolution, the chandelier – swayed back and forth.
It was one of the serious warning signs of many. The chandeliers were really responsible for cluing the Truman family into the fact that they were living in a house that might fall down on them. The chandeliers were simply screwed into the wooden beams that crossed the floors, and that wood at that point was so dry and brittle that when someone walked across the floor upstairs, the chandeliers below would start to shake and sway back and forth.
Or took a bath.
In this case, Truman was taking a bath upstairs on that particular afternoon while Bess was downstairs in the Blue Room having tea with the Daughters of the American Revolution. And Truman came close to plunging through in his bathtub, which was an idea that tickled him and horrified the proper women, of course.
Truman is often described as a reluctant vice president, then a reluctant president. Is that why he called the White House the Great White Jail?
He called it the Great White Jail largely because Bess Truman hated the place. The security requirements of the presidency had forced Truman to keep secrets from his wife for the first time in his political career. She had very much been his partner, and when she found herself excluded from his affair, she decided to retreat from the house for the entire summer, leaving him alone. And it was really Truman's loneliness in the house that caused him to call it the Great White Jail.
And then everybody saw him as a lame duck president after he took over after FDR died. So when he asked Congress for money, what happened?
Well, it didn't go very well. He got an initial appropriation, a small amount of money, I think it was $50,000, to do an initial survey of the house. What really loosened the purse strings of Congress was the structural report that emerged that basically said, if there aren't extensive things done to the house, it's going to collapse. And at that point, this issue stopped being a partisan one. And at that point, it didn't really matter who the president was. They probably would have handed the money over.
Well, I'm not sure that today Barack Obama asked Congress for money to stop some problems.
One can only be grateful that this job was already done.
Truman had to fight with Congress over his wish for a second floor porch to be added to the White House. Why did he want that?
Again, it goes back to Bess Truman. Margaret Truman revealed in her diaries that while her father said publicly he wanted the porch to give what he called balance to the South Portico, in truth, what Truman really wanted was a place to give his wife to sit outside because she liked the broad porches of the family home back in Independence. Unfortunately, she tried the porch out a few times, and tourists would gather and point to them, and it freaked her out, and she left anyway.
So we have that other porch built, and nobody uses it?
Basically. I mean, it's funny, the presidents that have come after Truman, including Eisenhower, who was very much no fan of Truman's by the time he took office, had to grudgingly admit that the porch was a very good idea. Presidents have very much enjoyed sitting out there.
My guest is Robert Clara, Klara. His previous book was FDR's Funeral Train. Now he's written The Hidden White House, Harry Truman and the Reconstruction of America's Most Famous Residence. So they finally agreed to pretty much gut the place?
It was the only alternative that they had at the time. The problem was that while the house's exterior walls, they were 4 feet thick and had pretty good foundations below the ground, the interior walls of brick had no foundations to speak of. So the combination of the weight that had been heaped on the house throughout the decades of adding improvements like plumbing and telegraph, telephone, and all the things that an elevator, for example, air conditioning, all this weight that was heaped onto an old house was heaped onto walls that could not support the weight. And so the house was crumbling, literally crumbling to pieces. They had no choice but to rip it out.
How much of the original building remains? Just the exterior?
That's it. Only the shell. If you were to go to the White House today, the moment you step in the front door, you're standing inside of a structure that was completed in 1952.
Now, they didn't move to a hotel during the reconstruction work. They moved back to the Blair House, where he'd lived when he was vice president?
Yes, they moved back across the street. Largely by
And what happened to his vice president?
You know, At the time, I don't know. But nobody was living in Blair House at the time.
This is like New York mayors. They all don't want to live in Gracie Mansion.
Yeah. Well, at the time, Blair House had just been purchased by the Roosevelts, and it was considered kind of overflow housing because Eleanor Roosevelt had grown very tired of Winston Churchill's visits because he drank and smoked too much. So she had persuaded Franklin to buy the house across the street to stick the guests in, and he had done so. It ended up benefiting the Trumans tremendously. It gave them a place to move to.
But weren't there security risks there?
Enormous. And that is what ended up nearly costing us Harry Truman as president when he was nearly assassinated.
By Puerto Rican nationalists.
Yes, by nationalists who believed that by assassinating the president, they would cause a national disruption. And amid the chaos, Puerto Rico would declare its independence. It was a crazy idea. But the frightening thing about it is they came very close to succeeding. Truman's bedroom was on the second floor. It was a warm day. His window was open. And as the bullet started flying, he actually stuck his head out the window.
Now, we know what happens when government projects occur.
They take too long and cost too much.
It's put out for bidding. So who was leading this project?
Well, they put out a call for bids, and the assumption was that one of the large construction companies in America, there were 10 that were well-capitalized enough to take on the job, that one of them would bid. And most of the bids came in around $300,000 or so.
Except John McShane.
Except John McShane, who bid $100,000, which was crazy because no construction firm could make a profit on that. And indeed, McShane had no intention of making a profit on it.
So he saw this as a contribution to the United States?
He saw – you know, I talked to his daughter, who is still with us and was incredibly generous to give me an afternoon of her time. And she said –
You've dedicated the book to her.
Indeed, I did. She was my sole living link to this story. Everybody else involved with it directly is gone. She remembered it and remembered that her father, yes, he did want to give something back, but he also saw it as a prestigious commission, more prestigious than even the Pentagon, which he had also built.
Did he do a good job?
I think he did an incredible job, and the best testament is that the place is still standing and was built with steel and concrete so massive that it's unlikely that they'll need to do anything to it at any point soon.
Despite the sand underneath?
Well, they solved that problem.
It's called compressible soil.
Compressible soil, yes. But compressible soil is not what you want beneath your house. And what they did was they took the outer walls down another 22 feet. They dug literally beneath the house and sunk shafts and filled them with cement. And eventually they were able to lower all the foundations 22 feet to a gravel layer of soil that could support the weight of the house.
Was the plan to rebuild it to look just like it had been when it was first built?
The interior or the exterior? The interior? Yeah.
Other than the porch.
Well, other than the porch, yes. Lorenzo Winslow, who was the White House architect, struggled with this incredibly because every time a new president moves into the house, there's usually a redecoration. So Americans expected a authentic White House. He had the problem of, well, what does authentic look like? Was it the Victorian period of the Lincolns? What it looked like when Adams moved in 1800, when the East Room wasn't even finished, and it was a bare stone wall? So he selected the period of 1800 to 1810.
The Federalist period.
Yes, what he called Georgian, what we would call federal, and decided that he would design everything in terms of the curtains, the wallpaper, the furniture to adhere to that time period.
How did the official White House souvenir program come about?
The official souvenir program was a function of two things. First of all, they had literally tons of rubble that were sitting at Fort Myer military base across the Potomac. They had no idea what to do with it. A salvage company had made them $1 million offer on it, and they turned it down. They were afraid of profiteering from it. So eventually, the second factor was they got a pile of letters from Americans requesting a piece of the White House. And so they decided, well, to prevent somebody from capitalizing on it, the only way to do it is to sell the pieces off ourselves, and that's what the government did.
Should I assume that I could probably find one of those pieces on eBay?
Indeed, you can, because that's where I found mine.
You write that the photographic record of the renovation was the greatest legacy of Abbey Rowe, the White House photographer at the time. He had been hired by Eleanor Roosevelt.
Yes, he was. His story was amazing. He actually had a disability. He walked with a leg brace, not as severe as FDR's disability, of course, but still he had a difficult time. During the Depression, he was working on a road crew, if you can imagine. And Eleanor Roosevelt happened to trot by on her horse. Roe had been a hobby photographer at the time. He snapped her picture and sent it to her, and she loved it and showed it to FDR, and one thing led to another, and he was hired as White House photographer.
And those are – some of those photographs are on the cover of this book.
They're all over the book. The wonder of Abbey Row is not just that he took a lot of terrific photographs, but because they're government property, they're public domain as well.
Recently, official White House photographers were in the news because President Obama wants to restrict unofficial photos of him and his family. Was Truman protective of his family's privacy?
He was enormously sensitive to their privacy. It was one of the reasons why the porch failed, is when they tried sitting out there and people lined up and pointed at them and eventually crowds gathered, they had to go back inside. But yet Truman at the same time, there were so many photographs of he and his wife and just about everything that went on in the administration. I feel like he understood that the importance of the office outweighed personal concerns of privacy, although he did not hesitate to shut the door and say, don't come in.
Or to write to the Washington Post in case his daughter got a bad review.
Oh, that review. Yes. They weren't able to stop him from mailing that letter in time. Usually the practice with Truman was to take his letters and set them aside for a day because his temper was flared like a blowtorch.
How did the news that the Soviet Union had an atomic bomb affect the plans for the new White House?
Well, the Soviets blew up their bomb years and years before anybody expected that they would, because at the time there was no understanding, no knowledge that there had been a spy in the Manhattan Project, Klaus Fuchs, feeding nuclear secrets to the Soviets. So when they blew their bomb in 1949 and we found out about it several months later, basically, that plus the combination of the outbreak of the Korean War led to a fear, not just of communism, which was already building, but a fear in Truman's mind in particular that the Soviets were willing to engage us in armed conflict because the Soviets had supplied the North Koreans with tanks, among other things. So although the renovation was well along, plans were very hastily drawn up to fit the sub-basement level with a bomb shelter.
And how the renovation went on to 1952, which was the year that Eisenhower was elected president. How much time did the Trumans actually get to spend in
only
the newly renovated
months.
White House?
It was Truman had been determined to spend a year in the renovated house. And as the work progressed very, very slowly, his irritation grew. And eventually he would get a few months, but not as long as he wanted.
A listener wrote on our show page, what are the security concerns associated with having presidents sit outside in the White House porch?
I haven't seen...
Do any of them do it?
I believe that they still do it because I know that the Clintons like to sit out there. But it's important to remember that the porch faces the South Lawn. And the gate of the South Lawn is a good portion. Now it's 17 acres of property, and most of them are on the south side of the house. And so it's not unknown to have snipers posted on the roof, and the public is far enough away.
And what about some of the other buildings that were put up at that time? Have they also suffered? The Capitol building, for example?
You know, it's funny. I didn't read anything about any structural difficulties with the Capitol building, and my only assumption is that the characteristics of the soil varied depending on where you went. And it's true like that with any site. You could go 200 feet away and be in better soil. It was just unfortunate that this particular piece of high ground was sandy, and it was the one that they went with. Rather unfortunately for the House.
Have you uncovered another story that you're investigating now?
You know what? Not in the course of this book, although it was in the course of my FDR's funeral train book that I uncovered a photograph of the White House being renovated. And I found it. It was this picture of this gutted house, and I thought it was a parking garage. And in fact, it was the White House.
This book is The Hidden White House, Harry Truman and the Reconstruction of America's Most Famous Residence. It's published by St. Martin's Press in the Thomas Dunn imprint. And my great thanks to Robert Clara, K-L-A-R-A, for being our guest today.
Thanks, Leonard.